Hello, and welcome to part two of The Crow. In this episode, we join guest Christopher Lawrence one more time to break down his favorite movie, The Crow, starring Brandon Lee, who was unfortunately unavailable to be a guest on this episode. We reached out to his people multiple times and got some nasty messages that I didn't read, but unfortunately, Brandon Lee couldn't be on the episode. But we do have Christopher Lawrence. Now, if you enjoy the Quality Time podcast and you enjoy the comedic stylings of one Eric Woodworth, Jeremy Woodworth, and or Christopher Lawrence, please drop us a 5-star rating, share with a friend, tell someone about us. It means the absolute world to us, costs you nothing at all, and you'd be a big help. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for the continuation of The Crow.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
You look like
if the gluttony victim from Seven became the Crow.
Glad you didn't say the big fat ass vampire from Blade. So.
Oh, you mean what was that vampire's name? Pearl.
Yeah.
She could get
still,
it.
Still very fuckable though.
I'd fuck in a heartbeat.
You couldn't tell the difference between her vagina and like just a random fold.
Take a fold and go to town. She could have sex with 100 guys at once.
Dude, go to Pound Town.
Haters are gonna hate. What can you say? You know, haters are gonna hate.
Hey, folds need love too.
By the way, I do have to give it up to you, Eric. Your quarantine video that you did when you said this is special. This is important, or whatever. No, this means something. This is important. That was from UHF. Perfect.
No, it's actually from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but was parodied in UHF. So you are correct on that.
Oh, I didn't realize it was from Close Encounter. Okay.
Yeah, if you ever watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind, he takes the mashed potatoes and he makes the Devil's Tower, which is a U.S. national monument. He goes, "This means something. This is important." But yes, they also parody that in UHF because that was a big movie at the time.
And then he says, "I didn't want to be in the mask."
Well, hey, welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast, home of all things quality and this the podcast. And here we
End
are.
Time.
Are End you gonna record? Time. Are you recording?
Yeah, I'm rolling. We're here. We're live again. We're doing it, brother. We're doing it. I'm joined. My name is Eric Woodworth, and thank you so much for joining us once again. And if you look to my virtual left, my blood, my brother, none other than Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
Who are you talking about?
You?
No, it's me. It's Brandon Lee.
you look exactly like him. Crow face and all, brother.
Yeah.
Did they bury Brandon Lee in a river?
I feel kind of bloated up ever since I've been floating on the river for years, but I'm back. I'm Brandon Lee.
Brandon Lee. He's like Stagger Lee with my fucking...
I drive around in my orange car, the General Lee.
There you go. We're talking Brandon Lee. I had a friend named Lee. He died shooting a movie with me and Chris Lawrence and Brandon Lee flying free with the Crowie. That's all I got, guys. Thank you. We did it. And our other guest, returning from last week, none other than the very funny, the very talented, Mr. Christopher Lawrence!
Yes! Thank you for having me back, Eric.
Thank you for joining us once again for the Crow. We had to rip the video from the last one that I have to make the light of day just because it was such a delay in the show at this point. So welcome to quality time. Jeremy went his extra way so that the light wasn't shining directly into his camera. So respect to Jeremy. Now, Chris, you are a big The Crow fan. You are adorned with memorabilia to your left and right. You have everything. What would you say is your most prized possession out of that whole lot?
I would actually probably have to say it's the first appearance of The Crow right here from Caliber Comics. Mm-hmm. Because this issue's probably now worth around 75, 80 bucks.
Damn, it almost doubled in value. Hell yeah.
And then this right here, the snow globe, is just a pretty cool piece. So
it is. It's a think piece.
Yeah. And of course, I like the never been opened McFarlane 1/6 maquette over here. But yeah, so it's I have something for everyone. Comics, figures, you know. I also have a Crow Funko Pop in my office.
Oh, hell yeah. Is this your biggest fandom thing that you're into? Is there something else you have down in your basement here that is like, oh, The Crow, this is my second hobby, but my first is blank?
I would have to say following up on The Crow stuff is probably Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. So basically any material that Ernie Hudson has worked on, you collect at this point.
I have every bit of Ernie Hudson merchandise you could possibly imagine.
You have all the Congo action figure sets.
I've got the principal from the Substitute action figure right before Tom Berenger shoves his nose into his brain. I've got that.
You have the action figure of Ernie Hudson as the Warden of Oz.
The Warden from Oz.
HBO series. It was a real keeper, but McFarlane Toys made it. You bought it.
Yeah, I was like, I need this. The only piece of Crow memorabilia that I don't have that I kind of regret not having is... they have the scene between Top Dollar and the Crow on top of the cathedral. Hot Topic made that, and I don't have that.
Oh, what is that going for on eBay these days?
I'm probably getting it for like 50 bucks. I just haven't driven myself to go get it yet.
Okay.
My favorite accessories with the Crow toy is, of course, his Crow car.
The Crowmobile?
And of course, is the Crow Cave playset.
Chris didn't actually show us this, but he didn't show us his Crow hang glider that he bought. That's actually in the back. It couldn't be put in the frame.
My other favorite is the stage set where Crow actually plays with Kiss.
Hey, look at this right here. This is actually a Glock-themed Crow gun that I bought. It's very good. This one's actually modeled after the same one that killed Brandon Lee. It's very, very popular. Very
only
big with
fired
the kids.
Once.
I wonder how much that's got to be a stage piece of memorabilia, like the stage prop that actually killed Brandon Lee.
I'm pretty sure I read that gun was destroyed.
Well, that's sad.
After basically they determined that there was no criminal activity involved, I'm pretty sure I read that it was destroyed.
Because that's a high dollar. That's got to be up in the couple, like I'd put in the two-digit thousands range to own, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the gun that killed Brandon Lee.
I mean, I think that's the only thing that I'm really missing from my collection is something from the actual movie. Like, that's what I really... like, if I had one of those theater masks or something, like, from the that was actually on screen or some, that would be pretty good to me. That would be pretty cool.
Let me see. I'm going to Google search The Crow props. And let's see what we can find. Movie props.
How many prop guns do you think that people are trying to hawk out?
Oh, Eric Draven's electric guitar. No, that's a replica. Okay, yeah. Original movie prop. The oversized blinking crow head. Let's see what that's going for. All right.
There's no dollar amount on this. It's just a... I'm looking at yourprops.com.
What about one of the morphine needles that stuck out of Funboy?
That would be pretty good. Ooh, Eric! Somebody has the original Eric Draven's gravestone.
Ooh!
That's pretty tight. There's no message... They're not necessarily for sale, but they're on here, so you can message the person to see what he'd be willing to give it up for.
I have a friend who deals... in actual props, who lived across our street when we lived in Ellicott City, and I forget the name of the website, but real props, and they do sell some replicas there, but also a lot of good stuff, and I can't even tell you what I'm really trying to buy from there.
Okay.
It might be expensive. Don't want anybody to know.
I remember this one episode of Comic Book Men where they went and visited this guy that had like all the Jaws memorabilia, and like, it was ridiculous. He had everything. He had like reels from the ship. He had bottle caps from the scene where they're drinking. He had everything. It was stupid what they had.
Oh,
the
shit.
The actual can that Quint actually crushed in his hand. So
yeah. Hey.
He did. He had tons of stuff. It's crazy.
Hey, there's a so the actual trench coat that Brandon Lee wore in The Crow, guess what that's going for right now?
$26,000.
Jeremy?
I'd say 30.
You go 30? It's only going for, well, this is in English pounds, it appears, but 20 to 25,000. So very close, Chris Lawrence, very close.
No, look at him. He was off by 1,000.
There's some other ones on here. Let's see. You can get Micah's head, prop head from the movie that has a bullet hole in it.
Oh, my favorite
I guess
prop.
From getting her eyes gouged out or something like that.
Oh, that's only, you mean Bei Ling?
Yeah, that's only going for $2,000 to $3,000. You can get that.
Oh, by the way, my favorite prop was when Savini was on Letterman and he brought the prop head of Greg Nicotero from Day of the Dead when he was actually on the table and the mouth moved. So, and of course, he mentions Nicotero, who's still nobody back then, back in the 80s, but now he's like monstrously huge. So.
Oh, shit. I'm looking at more of this. I'm on this website. It's called propstoreauction.com. Okay. One of the suggested items was John McClane's Bruce Willis radio from the movie Die Hard. All right, guess
the one he's carrying around talking to Hans on.
Yeah. Guess what that's running you?
Oh, from that movie?
Yes,
$75,000.
Okay, Jeremy.
$10.
Okay, you're both wrong and off by a lot. Only it the suggested auction value is $3,000 to $5,000. So
that's it.
You can own the fucking actual Kenwood FM transponder that John McClane was carrying around.
You know,
in the movie.
That's actually pretty cheap considering the fact that thing was in most of the movie.
Yeah, I mean that's in a lot of scenes of the movie right there. It's pretty good.
What you really want from that movie is the actual AUG stare that the bad guys used to shoot with. So,
ooh, they got John McClane's watch going for $3,000 to $5,000, too.
Want one of his wife beaters, just one of the T-shirts he's wearing.
That would be good. That's what I want, too, of all the things.
I actually want the paper towels that were wrapped around his feet. That's what I want.
Or the actual fake shoes, like the fake prosthetic feet that he wore to run across the glass. That would be pretty cool to have.
Oh yeah. Or the original Twinkies that Reginald Vell Johnson was carrying around when he left the Piggly Wiggly or whatever.
Oh hell yeah, man. Hell fucking yeah. I'd go with that. I would definitely go with that. So anyway, let's hop right back into the movie. We got a lot to go over. We barely scratched the surface of The Crow in part one. But to bring you guys up to speed, if you're fucking psychopath and are listening to part two of The Crow without listening to part one, Eric Draven, horribly murdered, played by actor Brandon Lee, who also physically dies in this film, has been resurrected by the magic of The Crow to right the wrongs of his raped wife. Right the wrongs 1 year later, as the same thugs that killed him are still running amok the streets of Detroit. Now,
those scenes where his wife was getting raped and the guy keeps singing that I'm singing in the rain was really, really disturbing. So,
are we reviewing Star Wars now, Jeremy? What the hell are you doing?
I'm using the Force.
Also, good Clockwork Orange reference, by the way.
Solid, solid.
She's very badly raped.
That's how you kill the Crow. You just play Beethoven's Fifths, and that's how he dies.
So while these murderous thugs are at play, you could see them at a local bar. They're doing their regular stuff, like swallowing cigarettes and putting out cigars on their tongues, as you do as a street thug.
And swallowing bullets.
Yeah, because that's what you got to do. And by the way, that's a bad case of diarrhea when you push that 9mm through your little fucking hole, through your fucking poop hole. Not the greatest thing in the world to do.
No.
So they're real unredeemable pieces of shit. But while Eric is visiting the site where he was murdered, his old apartment, remembering the past and how cool it was not to be murdered and be alive and have a hot wife, he's looking through a bunch of things, and you get to... He grabs the white grease paint and paints the likeness of one of the Halloween masks that was within the apartment, and paints his iconic face.
Ooh, he's got pictures.
That you'll see. And as we were looking at the video feed, you could see Christopher Lawrence holding very closely his Crow trading cards to show you, show him sitting there and doing it. He throws on a bunch of black clothes and stands before the window looking at the streets of Detroit. Wow.
Is it really showing how cool he is when, during the scene by listening to some Depeche Mode? Is that what it is?
It was The Cure, by the way.
The Cure, yeah. Another very manly band.
I feel like... is this one of those things like... he has that mask that he paints the Crow makeup to resemble, right? It's an all-white mask with, like, some black lines coming off of the... around the eye holes there. But... Was that a real thing before The Crow, or was this designed? So, like, I hearken it back to, like, the movie Scream, right, that comes later. Like, that the ghost face man, that was a real costume before the movie Scream that, you know, was made into something scary. Was the Crow mask a thing before The Crow?
Well, those were, like, basically based off, like, you know, the sad, happy theater masks, basically. Like, you could find a lot of porcelain dolls that had faces like that. So those weren't completely outlandish. I mean, that's where James O'Barr got the idea for the face paint. And apparently, Brandon Lee, according to the audio commentary track from director Alex Proyas, Brandon was not very happy with the first go-rounds of the makeup.
Oh, okay.
And actually, he had a lot of input on how that makeup was going to be put on his face.
Nice.
So this was very much, according to the director, this was very much Brandon's movie. Like, this was like his, this was going to be his breakout. Like, he did Rapid Fire. Mm-hmm. Like, this was going to be his breakout.
And well,
he certainly didn't do any good movies after this.
Yeah, yeah, all of them are real shit after The Crow. But no, we didn't really get into the murder of or the death of Brandon Lee and the Bruce Lee family curse, essentially, which has been outlined in documentaries and movies alike. But yeah, Brandon Lee actually tragically died during the filming of this, unfortunately, during a malfunction with one of the guns on set. It was, you know, the guns are prop guns, but they are actually real firing guns. Unfortunately, one of the 45s that was on set had, before it became a prop gun, somebody had shot the wrong caliber bullet in that gun, and there was a giant tip of a bullet, you know, that was stuck and lodged within that 45. So when they threw the blanks in, the blanks still are basically just gunpowder things that give off like a more of a flash, but that don't have that little, you know, the actual bullet at the top that actually shoots and put holes in you. So when that went off, it dislodged that giant bullet that was stuck in there, and that ended up striking Brandon Lee in his torso, and he ended up ultimately dying from shooting the crow.
Yeah, and you know, that goes up there probably with the death of the actor from Twilight Zone. The scene with the helicopter is like one of the most tragic accidents that's ever happened on film. I mean, and they have it on film when he died. I mean, like, they have it on film when he was shot and killed. I mean, basically,
yeah,
he died of internal bleeding.
I remember watching the E! True Hollywood Story to just show you how old I am. But E! Used to do the E! True Hollywood Stories. They were great. Those and Behind the Music. They were my bread and butter back in the late 90s. But they did one on Brandon Lee and actually showed the scene where he gets shot. And it's during a flashback scene with Fun Boy, who actually fucking shoots the gun and ends up killing Brandon Lee. I'm guessing, because this movie's so cohesive and it seems very well done, that this was something that they were doing reshoots for, you know, as flashbacks. And, you know, he thinks that's how he ended up fucking dying. Horrible fucking tragedy, to say the least.
And the actor who played Fun Boy, until the day he died, felt guilt over the entire thing. I mean, it was hard for him to get over, from what I've read and stuff like that.
So you guys don't know, this is like ancient history, but I remember it back in the 80s. There was a kid's show called The Voyagers, and it was like the little kid from like some Dio video of Last in Line. Mm-hmm. But his buddy was the older guy, and his name was John Eric Hexum. Apparently, he was doing a show called Cover Up, and he had a gun with blank cartridges, but he thought it would be fun to just put the blank cartridge gun up to his head, which still had the firepower of a gun, and just the blast itself blew his brains out. So,
damn.
Even though there wasn't a bullet in the gun. So
great.
So he died on October 18th, 1984. So way back there.
I mean, some of the shit that they just do in movies is that hasn't resulted in a death is actually pretty fucking amazing. Like, some of the stunt work, hats off to any stuntman out there that does this for our entertainment. But like, if you go back to like the Alfred Hitchcock days, what's the movie, the Alfred Hitchcock movie? I don't think it's The Birds, but there's a guy who, I think it's Vertigo, where he has to crawl underneath a giant carousel and you see the carousel spinning above him. That's a real fucking carousel that if he just moves his head up an inch, like he just gets decapitated, and that actor just went underneath that thing to do it.
Well, yeah, it's that, and also like you watch any of the Mad Max and the Road Warrior, like you watch those movies, like in the Australian cinema, that was like the Wild West, and also Chinese cinema with like coming up with like oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? Not Bruce Lee, obviously. Oh my God!
Why am I Abdul-Jabbar?
No, the one that does all Jackie Chan, like all of that stuff, man. Like there were no rules with stuff like that, and the fact that Jackie Chan only, you know, broke every bone in his body at least once is a miracle that he's not dead.
Yeah.
Oh, and the story of Hexum, to go back to, he did it with a 44 Magnum.
Yeah, that'll do it.
The thing is, if you're gonna have like a big flash coming out of a fake blank and a gun, they probably load it extra hot since it doesn't have to push a bullet. So the force of just that explosion itself is equally, if not more, firepower of that blast going through your freaking head. I'm surprised his head was even still there.
Mm. So now that we've seen it, the crow is now adorned with his crow look. Eric Draven's ready to hit the streets. We get to see some thugs at the local pawn shop trying to sell some of the stolen goods that they've gotten. The thug doesn't like the payout, but he ultimately accepts it. Next, we see the crow jumping across building rooftops to some Nine Inch Nails music, as you do when you're resurrected from the dead.
At this point, can I just take a quick detour? I know that we're so aloof right now.
Mm-hmm. We might as well make this a third episode.
Yeah, we're doing a three episoder at this point.
So back in the late 90s, Rob Zombie actually directed a Crow movie called like The Crow 2044 or something like that, starring Trent Reznor as the Crow.
For
where
real?
Trent Reznor was a mercenary that came back to life as the Crow, but couldn't remember his history. That's a real thing.
But it never saw the light of day, or how?
No.
It's all filmed. It was so bad they were like, we can't. I'm sorry.
Apparently,
Rob,
he filmed it in like a week. So yeah.
Wanna fuck you like a crow?
The script is online. You can look up the script online.
I want to pick you like an animal. So as he comes across one of the buildings, he comes across one of the men that murdered him in an alleyway, leaving the pawn shop. You said it was Tintin?
Yeah.
Yep. And as the... he then pulls like an Assassin's Creed style move and swan dives back first onto the concrete, just landing there and laughing after he hits, and then goes to confront this thug.
Yeah, so good.
Halloween ain't till mañana.
So, he comes up to him and makes short work of the thug with the knife, pins him to a wall ultimately.
Listen! I'm sure you'll remember. You killed them on Halloween.
Yeah, okay. Halloween, yeah. Some dude, some bitch, whatever.
Whatever. Her name was Shelly.
You cut her.
You raped her.
Shelly, yeah. Yeah, I shanked her pink ass and she loved it.
But the Tintin is able to break loose from his attacker. He breaks free and then starts throwing knives at Eric Draven. Eric ducks the first, deflects the second, and then catches it Kung Fu the Legend can... continue style by clapping his hands together, and Randy Johnson's it right back at that motherfucker, pinning him to a crate through Tintin's shoulder. The crow draws a knife and heads towards him.
Victims.
Aren't we all?
Boom, and fucking takes out Tintin. Our first kill of the movie of a bad guy. I guess technically our third kill of the movie now, but...
Can I say, I think you dawned upon a pretty cool character for a movie called The Craw.
The Craw!
He's actually a crawfish character.
Oh my God!
All the powers of a crawfish, so...
We have come here for a spicy jambalaya.
I can be bored by the rest of them.
I tell you, you can try to boil me alive to eat me, but you ain't gonna eat me alive.
I have come here to bring forth justice and spicy Creole flavor.
I have come back on Fat Tuesday to right the wrongs.
Why don't you throw some crazy beads at me and I'll show you my titties.
So next we're taken to the local goth club where people hang out, right? It looks like a whole fucking... Oh, where are you? Band? Oh, yeah. So there's a band playing on the stage. It looks like the knockoff version of Hole. Like, I mentioned this and wrote
it. I was going to say Four Non-Blondes.
And we meet our big bad Gideon, and we also get to meet Tony Todd, also famous from the movie Candyman, probably a future episode. We haven't done Candyman yet.
Night of the Living Dead, part 1990.
Yeah, who is Gideon's right-hand man.
No, wait, hold on. Time out. The bad guy's name is Top Dollar. Gideon is the pawn shop owner played by John Polito. Top Dollar is played by Michael Wolcott.
Apologies. I thought that was Gideon. Damn.
No,
I fucked
Gideon
this all
is
up.
The pawn shop guy.
Oh my God. What a horrible name for him.
I should have given that one to Joe Robinson.
Yeah, there we go. So we get to hear a little bit from Tony Todd's character here.
Guess what? Arcade games fell down, went boom.
Boom.
Can you imagine that? It's tragic.
Gather your soldiers. You're on for tomorrow night. No sweat.
Is the man in?
He's taking a beating.
So, the man is taking a meeting.
Okay. Name your favorite Tony Todd part.
I can tell you right off the top of my head, it is from the movie The Rock. And it's a part, it's literally the part where he goes, "We want our fucking money!" That's my favorite Tony Todd part.
Okay, the first time I met Tony Todd, I think, was at Monster Mania. And of course, I asked for the Klingon pose, which is kind of like, you know, we're ready to go at it. And of course, Tony Todd is my favorite Klingon because he's the Malcolm X of Klingons when he really fucks with Worf. And he's like, he's getting in Worf's face. He's like, "Is there any more Klingon blood in you?" Pretty much like calling him like Mr. Whitey of the universe, you know? So
yeah, he's calling him like the Uncle Tom of Klingons.
Yeah, Uncle Tom in space.
What are you, Uncle Kirk?
Oh, he's so fucking badass. I mean, I think he took lessons from Denzel and has overcome every other black actor ever. So,
yeah, he's no Keith David, but I like him. So the man who is Top Dollar, you get to shows his girlfriend a gift that he got from his dad. Childhood is over the second you know you're going to die, which is, I think, a pretty fucking cool thing to think of, which is why I remind my children that death is around every corner. So they're
amazing. A child makes it to age two.
Yeah and it's also his sister / girlfriend. It's not really clear. She's also like a witch who's Asian. I don't know how to explain her, but
basically it's Bei-Ling. It's just Bei-Ling. Yeah.
She's his sister, girlfriend, West Virginia, and also does fucking wizardry. That's all you need to know about her.
Okay, so I've met Bei-Ling at Chiller, and I didn't even really know what movie she was or what kind of celebrity she was. But she came up and actually wanted her picture with me, which I was very happy to do because she's rather hot, and that's for sure. But the last time, I've gotten multiple pictures with her. The last time I met her, she literally put her leg up on me almost like I was playing a guitar.
Nice.
Out of her leg.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, this is fucking awesome, which is, that's another reason why I will be Pogo hopefully until I die, which is at least a couple more years.
Well, that's who we should have reached out to get an interview, Jeremy, the girl that was willing to like get within 5 feet of you. Like, that's,
well, I don't even know
one.
If I'm a friend with her on Facebook, but I guess I should have. So.
Dude, so real quick, so she was actually in an episode of Entourage where she played a stunt coordinator for a commercial that the main character was in. But of course, you know, his brother Johnny Drama goes, "I could do my own stunts, bro. I was in The Crow. I was in a scene with Brandon Lee." And of course, Bei-Ling's just standing there going like,
"Nice."
Yeah. Is it Bei-Ling or Bei-Ling?
Bilingual, bling.
We just call her
Bei-Ling.
I just call her Blingy. That's what, you know, we're in the clown world. We just call her Blingy. That's
incidentally, though, I'm going to put up for these I will give it up for these Crow movies for always going with diversity and the bad guys. I mean, the second one, you also had Twee Trang, who played the Yellow Ranger in Power Rangers as one of the bad guys in City of Angels. R.I.P. Twee.
I got a name for them all. It's all called Gooker names.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
Hey, that was Vietnam Tom, not affiliated with the...
Go back to my box.
Oh, God.
Agent Orange. Okay, sorry, Eric. We keep taking these detours here.
It's good. So it's also revealed that the sister, girlfriend, Asian hottie, and Top Dollar actually have probably fucked some poor hooker to death while they're in that room. And they just kind of look at her body. And
wait,
like,
he said in that line, I think we broke her. Like, come on.
Yes. As you do, which I don't think either of them fuck that good, okay? So clearly they just like murdering people. That's fun.
And then it's implied that she dug her eyes out of her head with that knife, right?
Yeah, because those eyes will show up a little bit later in the story. Now, next, we see young Sarah. She heads to the local bar to meet up with her mom, Darla, who's getting frisky with one of the fucking murder goons, who we'll find out is Fun Boy shortly enough.
Goon, that's great.
She begrudgingly gives her a few bucks to just fucking piss off. Next, we see Dead Man Eric Draven headed to the pawn shop.
Suddenly, I heard a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. I'm looking for something in an engagement ring. Gold.
You're looking for a coroner.
Shift the brains.
The wound immediately heals.
Shit on me.
I repeat, a gold engagement ring, yes? It was pawned here a year ago by a customer of yours named Tintin. He confided in me before he ran out of breath.
So, let's talk about how comical that body looks when they cut to it. Was Tintin carrying this many knives? Was he carrying that many knives?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tintin is a man. He's a practical dude. And they do a quick flash where there's like literally 10 knives sticking out of his fucking chest as the cops are dragging it off. It's pretty epic.
I normally carry that many knives, okay, so I have a problem, whatever.
There's also a giant crow symbol painted in blood on the wall near there, and I like that they ask Ernie Hudson's character, like, what do you think that is? He's like, probably just graffiti, who knows?
He says, I call that blood, Lieutenant, but I'm sure you're going to write it up as graffiti. Such a great line. History between Ernie Hudson and that lieutenant. There's obviously history there, and he was demoted obviously at some point.
Yeah, because clearly at one time he was a detective, now he's back to a beat cop because he was probably trying to find the truth too often.
And it's also pretty cool that he quotes from that poem by David Allan Poe. So yeah.
David Allan Poe,
huh?
Yeah. So
yes, obviously he's talking about Edgar Allan Poe, and he's quoting the Raven, not rapping at my chamber door. And meanwhile, the cops find him. Eric then goes to a box of rings, finds his sweet Shelley's ring within there. He pours gas all over the place and basically takes the shotgun that he's holding and then pours like a whole like box of rings into the barrel of the gun. So now it's just loaded with a shit ton of rings on top of it. And he gives basically tortures him a little, tortures the pawn shop owner a little bit, and gives him the location of Fun Boy.
Fun Boy, he lives here upstairs, all right?
Fun Boy.
A whole jolly club. Jolly Pirate Nixon.
Oh, Jesus Christ, an attack.
Hold still. Not gonna kill you. Your job will be to tell the rest of them that death is coming for them tonight. Tell them Eric Draven sends his regards.
And as he walks out,
walk out of here. They're gonna erase your sorry ass.
He points the shotgun at the door that's obviously filled. The place is filled with gasoline.
No, man. No! No! No!
And then he fires the rings out of there, which ignites a giant fire. But luckily, our pawn shop owner is able to escape just in time before the flames engulf his small business establishment. And I got to be honest with you, Detroit's a tough place to own a small business. And the fact that he is destroying industry in an already ravaged, impoverished neighborhood, I just don't feel like this is the right move for Eric Draven.
This is just
I want to say though that explosion was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a good ass explosion, man. Hell yeah.
This is just another day, you know, with people with their 6,000 SUXs out on the street firing into businesses and blowing them up.
So. With their 10,000 SPF sunblock.
Hell yeah, because the ozone layer's gone.
So, Officer Albright shows up just in time to see the Crow leaving.
Wait, can I trivia?
Go for it.
So at one point during that scene, Albright says to the looters, "Hey, go away." One of the looters, by the way, the creator of the Crow, James O'Barr.
Oh, look at that. Hell yeah.
I did not see that. Can you show that card again?
You can barely see him. Like, it's a terrible still image, but that's him.
Wow. Oh,
yeah, that is a terrible image.
Yeah.
Man, that's tight. I feel very unfulfilled from everything you just shared there. But I like it, ultimately.
It's our day to shit on Chris.
Hey, I'm trying to bring an element of this which may not be talked about in other films, other podcasts. So
I think this is well worth a Patreon of like $1,000. So.
I agree. I'm on the same fucking note as you, brother. So,
and we will give Chris at least $5 of that.
Shut the fuck up. Stop giving away our fucking earnings, Jeremy.
$5.
Anything that keeps you in a house and out of my home, Jeremy, is my only goal in life, okay?
And I will shine his knob as long as there's a big glory hole wall between us, so.
So Ernie Hudson, Detective Albright, meets up with the Crow outside of this pawn shop that he's just exploded.
You high?
You don't remember me.
What are you talking about?
How about Shelley? Do you remember Shelley Webster?
Shelley Webster's dead, my friend. I want you to move over to the curb there. Go on real nice and easy.
Oh, it gets better. Do you know someone named T-Bird? He had a friend who shouldn't have played with knives. Like the coat?
The guy that murdered Tintin.
He was already dead. He died a year ago, the moment he touched her. They're all dead. They just don't know it yet.
Get away from there!
Unfortunately, as looters roll up, the Crow uses that as an opportunity to totally Batman disappear in front of him and gets away from the grasps of Detective Albright. You were saying, Christopher.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, that's when the looters show up, but yeah, like, then there's so many good lines from Ernie Hudson in this movie. It's like, at least he didn't do that walking against the wind shit. I hate that. Like, but also that dialogue that Brandon Lee says about, hey, do you know Tintin? No, do you know T-Bird, one of his friends, you know, died? You like the jacket? Like, and then Ernie Hudson goes, oh, you're the guy that killed Tintin. It's like, oh my God, wow, detective, that was some great police work right there.
I do like that line though of like, and he was just like, he was already a dead man the minute he touched her. So
yeah, that's a great line.
He just
yeah.
didn't know he was dead yet. That's good. I do. Listen, it's not a bad plot. It's a fucking good story. I really do enjoy it. So he disappears during that. Now, back at Top Dollar's place, his witch doctor Asian girlfriend's sister is cooking up a human eye to kind of, I guess, see some future shit. He's doing a mountain of cocaine. Like, not a small amount of cocaine. Just Tony Montana-style pile of cocaine that he's doing. He gets the news from his top dog, Tony Todd, that the pawn shop has been burned to the ground without his authorization. So he sends marching orders to find out who did it. Now, Eric runs into Sarah, saves her from getting run over ultimately as a car's about to hit her. She doesn't recognize him at first, but when she does, he immediately disappears. Officer Albright starts poking into Eric Draven's and Shelley's murder. Obviously, the other police officers don't like that, so he has to get it kind of secretly, blah, 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 blah.
Now, well, can we go into the other cop?
Yes. Tell me about the other cop, Jeremy.
The other cop is the one of our beloved actors from, what is it, Cobra?
Oh, really? She was in the Cobra episode?
No, the other cop that hassles him, Marco Rodriguez.
Yeah, the captain or lieutenant or whatever.
Yeah, the guy with the super pock marks, just like Seal in his face.
Yeah, he looks like Edward James Olmos ordered from Wish.
Him and Jürgen Prochnow now had a child, so. Yeah. And also his brother is Brian Adams, so. But yeah, he was the psycho in the shopping center, the supermarket in the beginning of Cobra. So.
You are correct. I think this movie, I actually took no notes on the character that you're talking about because I realized at the end of the movie he didn't matter at all. Like, he's the one character that can be completely cut, and I think he changes in no way.
And I think he gives one of the lines that's most laughable about about the plot as well. So.
So next we see old Eric Draven tracking down Fun Boy, who's doing some sweet heroin with Darla. It's not heroin, it's morphine. They're shooting morphine. You know, they're old school. And Eric enters through the window with a guitar in hand that he's stolen from the fucking pawn shop.
Dear Fun Boy.
What the fuck?
Oh, man, don't do that!
You nearly gave me a fucking heart attack.
So he then takes his gun out. Funboy shoots Eric Draven through the hand, and it heals up in front of his eyes. And Funboy looks like he's basically seen a ghost. Then the Crow takes him and takes a little stab at some stand-up comedy.
Oh, I love this joke.
Stop me if you heard this one. Jesus Christ walks into a hotel.
Fun Boy shoots him.
He hands the innkeeper three nails and he asks.
Shoots him again.
Did you ever fucking die? You put me up for the night?
So, that's a good Jesus joke right there. Can you put me up for the night? I like it. I would put him up early in the lineup, not as a headliner or feature, but a solid cool-off comic in between the host and feature. No?
Can we talk about Anna Thompson?
Yes, we can talk about Anna Thompson. Is that the actress that plays Darla in this scene with huge breasts? Yes.
Can we talk about her biggest role? Do you remember that one?
Bad Boys?
I think she was in Bad Boys, but I think her biggest role was the horror that got her face cut up in The Unforgiven.
Mm. Oh!
But my favorite has to be when she was on HBO TV show as... Cindy's Sex Talk, where she, oh my gosh, she was so damn hot. And also my other favorite has to be the movie Warlock, where she played the priest's wife, and the warlock threatens to stillborn her children as he caresses her pregnant belly. So
wow, nice. I forgot lest about they the movie.
Lest they be born slugs of dead flesh.
So He drags the unconscious fun boy to the bathtub and starts a shower for him. He goes over to Darla, grabs her, and forces her to look into the mirror, and then uses the magic crow powers to pump the morphine out of the fucking holes in her arm that she's injected. So you just see
they just pump out like a big zit.
I'm just going to get this out of you. No problem. And he tells her, you need to go fucking take your big-tittied ass and take care of your fucking gorgeous daughter, who is actually nice to me. And she fucking obliges him and then leaves.
Trivia?
Mm-hmm.
So, are you getting annoyed by this? Because I'll stop.
No, I stop.
Just add it. Just go. Go quick.
Eric says something to Darla before, you know, when he's doing the morphine. He says, "Mother is the word for God on the lips and hearts of all children." That's actually a quote from a poet named William Makepeace Thackeray. And I know that because I actually made a collage with that quote for my wife for a Mother's Day gift with my son. And the other piece of trivia is that Funboy was actually, that character was designed to look like David Bowie. And actually, they tried to get Bowie to play him. But as you can imagine, Jareth the Goblin King was like, nah, not going to do this one. But so that's why the actor that plays Funboy looks a lot like David Bowie.
We also reached out to David Bowie to see if he would do the Quality Time Pod. But unfortunately, his people didn't get back to us. So,
I haven't done anything.
It's so funny that you say that, because I actually reached out to Prince to see if he can get David Bowie to do the podcast.
One day we're going to make it to that level where we finally get to the inner circle of Hollywood and we get the inside scoop of the people on the ground. But today ain't that day, brother. So he picks up, Eric Draven picks up one of the needles that they were injecting with and has a little bright bing that goes off in his skull. We'll see what his plan is very, very soon. Now, at the bar, Tony Todd, the main henchman, he's talking to the pawn shop owner, and he's trying to drink his troubles away. Tony Todd sees Darla leave the bar because she apparently lives right above the fucking horrible rundown piece of shit bar. He then goes to investigate why Darla's running out. He sees that Funboy's chest is completely filled with needles, just I'd say the equivalent amount that of knives that Tintin had in his chest. Now this guy has fucking morphine needles pumped into him.
There are seven needles in this guy's chest.
Fuck yeah. And just as Tony Todd enters the top, you see the crow kind of backwards fucking fly out with double birds, and there's like, peace, bitch! And just...
he just goes,
shh! And then dips on them whores. So, Draven then goes to visit Albright after this, and he goes to grab a beer from Albright's fridge, hands it to him, because obviously I'm an undead guy who's just chilling in your house. Why don't you have a beer? Horrible manners, but they learn that, ultimately from the scene, they learn that, you know, they're actually friends, they're on the same team, and that Detective Albright has a soft spot for the horrible way that the Eric Draven murder was handled, and he's just like, yo, respect, you're a real friend.
Yeah.
So next,
but this is a key plot point though, because he absorbs all of Ernie Hudson's memories of Shelley suffering in the hospital, which comes to play at the end of the movie.
Yes, and he respects the fact that he knows that Officer Albright stayed by Shelley's side all through the hospital as she was about to be in her last moment. So he really, like, you know, big ups for cucking my wife right before she died. Like, I really respect that a lot out of you. Also, have you seen Ghostbusters 2? Great film. I loved you in it. You were the best. Now, next we see the big boss, Top Dollar, getting some info on the situation from the pawn shop owner who delivers Eric Draven's message to him. But the boss is ultimately not pleased with all of this. So, Unfortunately, our sweet pawn shop owner Gideon has to die. Dabs,
for fuck's sake, die, will you?
Stabs a fucking sword through his neck. And then just shoots him a bunch of times. No big deal.
This is probably, I would say, probably the second worst death in the entire movie, by the way.
And I know that's the first audio that I've shared of our big bad right there. We have some more audio of him coming up. But I'll be honest with you. It sounds a lot like Heath Ledger's Joker. No? Years before it was ever invented.
You mean like... what, the gravel voice or what? Like,
I think he just sounds like Heath Ledger's Joker in that.
Well, the speech he gives about anarchy and everything toward the end is Joker blueprint written all over it. But Michael Wincott, who played Top Dollar, you know, this is not the first time he's dabbled with black magic in a film. He also was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where the witch in that one was burning eyeballs, too.
No, that's a good point. You know, yeah. I have to revisit that one. I haven't seen that one in ages.
Yeah, he played the sheriff's cousin or brother or whatever.
I really like to think that his character is the, what do you call it, the inspiration for the character Calypso in Twisted Metal with his hair.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
But only one person knows. It's me, Calypso.
But no, Eric, I'm with you. I do. I've never thought of it that way, but I do hear hints of what you're saying about Heath Ledger.
Well, now listen, I say Heath Ledger, but really the whole... I think this is the character that he's playing. He's really just inspired by Tom Waits. And I don't know if you've ever seen Tom Waits. He's a very famous musician. Yeah. But I'll share my screen right here for you. I mean, this is, no matter how great of an actor you think Heath is, and I think Heath Ledger's Joker was great, and I think the job that this guy does as fucking Top Dollar is great, but I do think they're literally ripped off of Tom Waits right here. And if you guys can see my screen now, which I think you can, check this out.
I have a growing level of popularity throughout the intercontinental United States, Japan, and I travel extensively in Europe as well. I don't do half bad.
They tell me you have a new market now in Ireland. Is that true?
Yeah. I've performed in Dublin and done very well there as well.
You look like a leprechaun. You should do well there.
Well, I'm also big in Philadelphia.
Excuse me.
So, anyway, Tom Waits, everybody. Tom Waits.
It's funny because he acts like somebody who's really high on drugs.
But, hey, I'll be honest with you. I was always blown away by the Heath Ledger portrayal of the Batman, of the Joker in The Dark Knight Rises, until I realized that he's just doing a Tom Waits impression the entire movie.
Well,
which is good, don't
like...
get me wrong, but it's great, but it took away some of the star power when I thought that was something that he created and not just something that he was emulating, if that makes sense.
It's kind of like when Columbus discovered America, that Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk and all the dances for that Billie Jean came from Fosse in that one movie that he was playing like a snake. I can't even remember the name of them. It's a terrible movie, but he plays like a snake come to life, and he's doing all of the dances that Michael Jackson did like 9 years before Michael Jackson did the Billie Jean dance at the award show.
Basically, what we're trying to say is anybody who's famous is actually a huge hack. That's the only thing we're trying to get at. And eventually, I also...
It took us 3 hours to get there, but we got there, guys.
We did it, baby. We fucking did it. So, After that guy gets fucking killed, next we see the remaining two low-level thugs cruising the streets. They stop in a convenience store to get some smokes and some chips, and while the one goes in, Eric is all of a sudden in the backseat of the car. He makes that guy drive away, leaving his buddy behind in the convenience store, but the guy ends up getting run over, and he gets back up and then carjacks the person that ran him over. Power move. So,
Let's keep in mind he gets run over by a Yugo.
Yeah.
And also, lest we forget, T-Bird's car, an amazing vehicle, by the way.
It is. It has like a fully exposed hot rod engine that's like popping through the top. Like,
I just remember that he had to open it from the bottom of the door, which I thought was so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty badass. It's a pretty car for a gangster to drive. I'll give him that. Yeah. So they start following. He starts following his buddy through the streets, and quickly the cops are now in tow. They speed through the streets of Detroit at speeds reaching 100 miles per hour, but the idiot who's following him takes a shortcut and ultimately T-bones the cops, allowing Eric and the other thug to escape safely, but not for long for that thug. Now, Eric duct tapes this guy to a car seat. You notice that he's surrounded by explosives within the car, and then Eric delivers this little soliloquy here.
I know you. I knew you.
But
you ain't you. You can't be you. We put you through the window. There ain't no coming back. This is the really real world. There ain't no coming back. We killed your dad. There ain't no coming back.
Eric duct tapes his mouth.
There ain't no coming back.
And then takes his foot, puts it on the accelerator. As he then heads him for the docks, but before he goes off the edge of the pier, he explodes the car. So you not only get drowned, you also explode before you hit the water. And he also took the time to set up a giant crow symbol that he can light on fire, that he can stand in the center of.
This goes, by the way, this goes up there with the Thomas Jane Punisher movie, when he puts Travolta through the car lot and it's a giant Punisher skull. This goes there with the, where do you find the time and how many bottles of lighter fluid did you use?
A lot. I mean, it's almost as if a crew of people who filmed a movie had to set it up to even make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just sitting there going, okay, I love the idea. I love it. And I think it's probably one of the most dramatic reveals. But, like, you just see him, like, with the bottle, and it's like he's just, like, free-handing this amazing crow symbol.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a second.
So, next, we see that Sarah is having trouble dealing with her new responsible mother, who's completely clean and cooks breakfast and does all that. The detective gets mad at Albright for protecting the crow and not helping him, and, we also see that Eric is still sadly is still having really sad flashbacks constantly.
Can I make a note about the artwork of the crow and his superpowers and everything?
Yeah, you don't even have to ask. You can just do it next time, man.
Well, you know, it's cool because he makes it out of fire and everything. But I think a really cool character that does like graffiti would be like the character of Cool Disco Dan. He just makes his tag and,
Disco Dan.
Kills somebody else in D.C.
Eric Draven's like, screw you, Banksy.
he's taking it out of the Mylar. So, he's going to read it. He's going to read a comic book while we actually do this.
No. I'm just showing you. Go on, because.
Show us all the naked pictures in there.
Yeah.
So,
naked.
Sorry, I derailed you, Eric.
So the remaining thug goes to tell Top Dollar what happened.
So,
real different. He was all painted up white like some kind of dead whore. I seen him. T-Bird, he sent me in for some road beard, right? And he took him away, but I chased him down. And he's flat right, T-Bird, to his fucking car. Oh, T-Bird, it's you, buddy.
Do
We ought to just videotape this, play it back.
Should have gotten an Oscar for this scene.
I just think it's fun that they hired Jeremy Woodworth for one scene of the movie at this point.
I love it. He goes, maybe we should just record this and play it back in slow motion. That's so
funny. So he's obviously fanatic about the situation. He's very manic, and he says that this motherfucker is going to come and kill me.
This ghost is going to kill my ass next. This ghost is going to kill me.
It ain't no ghost.
They have all arrived.
Watch him.
So they've all arrived. Good old Top Dollar has hired the best hitman from the streets of Detroit to go hunt down the Crow as they're all arriving at the goth club that he owns. Now, they start loading up their arsenal at the club, which is called Club Trash. Great name for a fucking goth club. That's where I would like to get my fucking peen touched by a girl that has too much metal in her face. So Gideon then rallies the boys to get excited about Devil's Night, where historically they go to light fires and burn shit down and be general arsonists all over the city of Detroit. And but he warns them that the idea has become an institution.
The idea has become an institution, boys. Time to move along.
You don't want us to do light my fire time for the whole city.
No, I want you to have a fire so goddamn big the gods will notice us again. That's what I'm saying.
I want all of you boys to be able to look me straight in the eye one more time and say,
Are we having fire watts?
Hey, you! Huh? What's your name? Skank! You don't feel that?
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook.
Big fucking hook.
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook. Well, boy, your mama must be damn proud of you.
But all of a sudden, the Crow shows up.
Gentlemen!
Can I make a joke real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to just have a regular fire like a regular Pistons game.
So, the Crow, Eric Draven, then sits at the top of the big gangster table, cross-leg, and looks over the fucking henchmen.
I see you have made your decision. Now let's see you enforce it.
Oh, this is already boring the shit out of me. Kill him!
So they unload on Eric Draven, but he gets up and fucking murders everyone in this goddamn room. Luckily,
well, can I just say, so but when he shoots the first dude, for the longest time, I thought the guy who got shot in the head first from under the table was Peter Berg, who directs a ton of movies and stuff. Like, I thought that was Peter Berg, and it wasn't. He looks exactly like him, though. But this scene is so damn good, in my opinion.
It is. It's a great action scene. Before we had the likes of John Wick, it's hard to compare him with some of the modern day action that we're used to today, like the Raids, the John Wicks, the Matrixes that will come later. I mean, before all those, you take those, any action scene after that, I mean, you're only looking at like Die Hard and some of the other ones that predate The Crow, and this holds up with any one of those fucking action scenes. Predator, you name it, this is a fucking good ass action sequence.
Yeah, this is a great climax right here.
And you said Peter Berg, that's the lead singer from Styx.
Yes.
No, Peter Berg is the director. I don't know.
So he eventually, after he kills like 20 people in this, I also think it's really weird, and this is one of my things that I fucking hate about movies, is like the low-level goon that's in a movie. Do you know what I'm talking about? There's always a guy that just somehow has a goon uniform. Like, yes. I'm part of a crime syndicate, but I also have a trucker hat and a fucking a bulletproof vest, because this is my job. This is my work attire.
They all have, like, you can watch it and you can see they're all different factions. Like, you have, like, the Yakuza.
Yes.
You have, like, the paramilitary guys. You have, like, what the hell is going on? What are these? It's like again, I'm going to use your Wish joke. It's like someone ordered all the games from the Warriors on Wish.com. That's what
I always feel like when I see a security guard, and I'm using air quotes, security guard, that's dressed like Paul Blart and is wearing sunglasses, you know he's going to be murdered soon.
Dude, that security guard looks like he's one of the extras from the scene in Blade.
100%.
Like, it's a nightclub.
You know that guy is as good as dead. Like, the second you see him, I'm like, they didn't spring enough on wardrobe to make you look like you would live through this scene.
They're like, hey, listen, Earl, can you just wear what you're going to wear to this? Like, don't even worry about it.
I just expect that, during the scene of fighting all the regular extras, that all of a sudden there's another guy with an Uzi up on, like, a big precipice somewhere that he has to kill so he can just fall down after he gets shot.
This is a great still shot right here of all the gang members pointing the gun at Eric Draven. That's so good right there.
Can I the biggest question I had of the entire film is, after he got shot by these guys like 1,000 times, not only does he heal, but I guess his clothes heal from like being shot like 1,000 times.
No, actually, if you actually watch and look at some of the still photos and stuff like that, like, his costume is completely tattered, and that's when he started, like, you never see the scene where he wraps electrical tape around his body, That's what's holding this all together, because the coat is destroyed.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, and so, I think my favorite part of this entire scene is, like, after he kicks the dude on the rolling chair into the crowd, the music stops, everything goes black. He goes to the vault where Top Dollar pulled that sword from before, and he pulls the sword and he goes, "You're all gonna die." And it's yes. Yeah. It's so
I
good.
Also so he finally gets his he gets up to Skank. And we get to hear this little bit of audio here.
"Guess it's not a good day to be a bad guy, huh, Skank?
What a Skank. That Skank right there. Skank dead.
That's right."
And he ends up tossing Skank out of the fucking, like, third story window to his fucking horrible death below.
Onto a cop car. And you know what's so funny? During that chase scene that we had at the beginning, like, in, you know, the cop car chase scene, when Draven passes with T-Bird in that car, the cop goes, "What the crap?" and throws the cup out. Well, when Skank hits the cop car and dies, that same cop goes, "What the crap?" It's like, what the They use this. It's like that scream that's always used in movies, like whatever that scream. Like, yeah.
Wilhelm.
Yeah, the Wilhelm. That guy was the Wilhelm of this movie, the "What the crap."
You know, that guy probably comes home from work every day and he was just like, "Hey, honey, how many what the craps?" "It was 9 what the craps today. 9 what the craps, okay? That's how many times I had to say it on the streets of fucking Detroit. It's filled with methamphetamines and morphine and fucking people falling on the top of my cop car, and I just gotta fucking clock in the next day. Anyway, can we get fucking Domino's tonight or what's up, honey? What are we gonna do, huh? You want to fucking call it a fancy night and get some champagne?" Anyway, the police get there and the Crow flees as a chopper follows him. The Crow gets away with the help of Officer Albright once again. So he's got help in the police force. Meanwhile, Top Dollar's guys and his sister Witch have a theory about the Crow, which I have no idea how they came up with this or how it came to fruition, but now we have a weakness.
"This guy ought to be red."
"So that, I take it, is the late, great Eric Draven."
"He has power, but it is power you can take from him."
"I like him already."
"The Crow is his link between the land of the living and the realm of the dead."
"So kill the Crow and destroy the man."
So the Crow is the secret to Eric Draven's power. So they have the idea.
Tony Todd's like, "Listen, If you say the crow five times, does it appear behind you? Because then we can just off him right then and there.
Yes. Hell yeah. So next, Eric goes to visit Shelley's grave one last time and finds Sarah sleeping nearby. He gives Shelley, Shelley's ring to Sarah.
I think she'd like you to have it.
And puts it on a little fucking necklace and gives it to her. They say their ultimate goodbyes. Now, Top Dollar then immediately kidnaps Sarah right after she's leaving there, making it extra personal for the Crow, who still has to basically kill Top Dollar before he can move on to his final resting place.
So hold on a second. I'm going to interject. There's a very key deleted scene from this movie.
Okay, key deleted scene.
So, in the Crow comic book, there's a character called the Skull Cowboy. You never see the Skull Cowboy throughout this movie, but they did film a couple scenes with him. And the Skull Cowboy almost acts as a secondary guide in the spirit world and continues to almost goad Eric into doing what he's doing, but tells him that he's only there to avenge the deaths of he and Shelley, and once he's done with that, the human world no longer needs him and his powers will go away. Well, in the film, there's the critical scene where the Skull Cowboy shows up on the steps of the cathedral and says, "You're done here. This is not your concern anymore." And Eric goes, "No, I'm going to do it." Now, fun fact for the both of you boys, because I know especially you, Jeremy, are really big into horror. The guy who played the Skull Cowboy was Michael Berryman.
Oh my gosh.
who's the, you know, the guy with Propecia or whatever.
Propecia.
Hills Have Eyes and stuff like that. Yeah, he played the Skull Cowboy. So if you watch the Blu-ray or the special edition, you can see those deleted scenes.
Oh, well, nice. Look at that.
He's the guy that would like to fuck Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, so in Devil's Reject. So
yeah, he was also in The Guyver. He was one of the aliens from The Guyver.
Oh, man, I'd love to do The Guyver as a future episode. I'll tell you that right now.
I've met Michael Berryman a couple times, and it was great to talk about his greatest line of all time, which is... I'd like to keep this between two of us. I'd really like to keep my teaching job. So,
yes.
From, Weird Science.
By the way, he is one of the nicest people too. I've the few horror cons that I've been to, he was at one of them. I spent probably the most time with him. He's a very, very kind man, and hopefully he makes it through COVID because I want to see him one more time. I love that guy.
So that's why. Well, that's why I decided to interject with that long interlude, but I thought you guys would get a kick out of that.
No, it was worth it because you mentioned another person that I met, which is pretty cool, and also, Berryman. I mean, too bad he got cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame. Now, the crow comes back to show Eric Draven what has happened, and what's her name has been kidnapped. Sarah's been kidnapped, and he shows up at the church to go rescue her. They immediately put a sniper bullet into the Crow, leaving Eric Draven defenseless.
Give me the girl, and I'll let you walk out of here.
Well, why don't you just give me a minute to think about that?
So he shoots Eric Draven, and then Eric realizes quickly he's not healing because the Crow has been shot, leaving him defenseless and able to heal himself, even though he's dead and doesn't really need his body. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's not important. The Crow is the source of his power.
Can we talk about... Do you have the audio of the joke that rivals the Jesus joke that Michael Wincott does?
I don't think I do, no.
No, got a little impression for you. Wah, wah, bang, fuck, I'm dead.
Classic. Yeah. So
I've gotten a little bit more this week just because of Jeff the mongoose, the talking mongoose from Isle of Man, is the whole idea that the raven is his familiar, is his little demon buddy, much like Nicole Kidman has her monkey in the Golden Compass. So.
Oh my god.
As Eric kind of lays helplessly bleeding on the floor, Top Dollar mentions, who's also not only holding a gun, but also has a samurai sword. It's important to mention that he's carrying a samurai
it's
sword.
So good.
He starts to kind of torture the helpless Eric, and he says, for a ghost, you bleed pretty just fine. And then Tony Todd is about to put the finishing blow on the Crow as he eyes him up to give him the fucking sniper kill. But out of nowhere, Detective Albright shows up on the scene to help out his buddy, the Crow.
It's still alive.
Let it kill it.
Bye-bye, Bernie.
And Ernie Hudson comes in, guns blazing, goes fucking hard.
Yeah, he shoots a flare at Tony Todd and then lights him up, which is so good.
And as he's going around shooting shit up, Albright seconds later goes up to... Albright finally catches up with the Crow.
I can handle it, don't worry.
I'm not worried. But here's the plan. You stay in front. When they run out of ammo, I'll arrest them.
That sounds like a great plan. There's just one problem.
Bleeding all over the place. I thought, you know, you were invincible.
I was.
What?
I'm not anymore.
Well, I guess you really will need my help, won't you? Come on.
So they head for the bell tower where the witch is up there. Albright gets fucking shot by that sweet Asian witch. And fucking Eric goes up to go confront her. But as she's got a gun drawn on him, she's holding the Crow saying, I have the secret to your powers. The Crow decides to turn on her and starts eating her eyes out. And she ultimately falls from the bell tower to her death.
Sweet irony.
Yeah. So the Crow is still alive, but for some reason, Eric Draven still can't heal. Again, I'm not going to get into the logistics of why this doesn't work, but, you know, hey, it's movie magic and magic. He still can't heal. So Eric steps out onto the rainy rooftop to confront Top Dollar, who has Sarah still. It's pouring down rain. Eric dodges a few sword blows and grabs a weather vane and rips it from its fucking girders so that he can... And it's also hit by lightning as he grabs it. Just very convenient. It hits by lightning. He rips it out and then uses that as his own weapon.
And by the
weapon.
Way, if he really lost his powers, he's already dead.
Yeah, exactly. You don't just get hit by lightning and be like, yeah, I can't heal. I'm fine. No big deal.
He also yells there can only be only one.
Yes. So eventually he tumbles down the roof with Top Dollar, and Top Dollar then comes up from behind him as he's trying to save Sarah and stabs him through the back.
I cleared that building. Hell, nothing in this town happens without my say-so. So I'm sorry if I spoiled your wedding plans there, friend. But if it's any consolation to you, you have put a smile on my face. You got a lot of spirit, son. I am gonna miss you.
I have something to give you. I don't want it anymore.
30 hours of pay.
So he grabs his face and basically makes him see all the horrible things that have happened to Eric, which overwhelms his mind. Eric then uses the opportunity to, I guess, like slightly nudge him off of the top of this church, and he falls on top of a gargoyle that he gets impaled upon, then like spits out the blood through his mouth in a pretty epic death for a final enemy in a movie. And then Chris is looking through his cards right now to show us the scene from this, which I felt, if he had done his proper show prep, would have already been ready.
I'm sorry.
This could have been a good
show. By the way, while I'm looking for that, I do want to say, though, I do appreciate the almost Christoph Waltz Blofeldian, it was me, I'm the author of all your pain. He gave the, I did this, it was me thing. But yeah, this is poetic right here.
Hell yeah. That's fucking epic.
First death, this is the best death in the movie right here.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I really think the merchandiser is like lost on this movie because they could have sold so many more Crow juicers of blood, you know, to make some special drinks. You know, they could have sold a lot of juicers.
Welcome to Crow High C's Blood Cooler. It's
this is some great blood. It's fresh. It is fresh. It's from the Crow. He makes fresh blood.
So Eric is then able to rescue fucking sweet Sarah, pulls her from impending doom. Luckily, Albright's still alive, breathing, but badly wounded. Eric uses his last strength to crawl back to Shelley's grave as he collapses and gets to see the ghost of his sweet bride-to-be come visit him from the grave. Sarah then goes to leave Shelley's ring at that grave.
People we love are stolen from us. The way to have them live on is to never stop loving them. Buildings burn, people die, but real love is forever.
Real love is forever. And then roll the end credits.
What? No! Fun fact, though, so the song that plays is called, the song that plays is It Can't Rain All the Time, which is the song that the Hangman's Joke, a.k.a. Eric Draven's band, plays. That's how Sarah realizes it's Eric in that scene where he goes, It Can't Rain All the Time. And she goes, Eric? So at the end of the movie, it's It Can't Rain All the Time.
I mean, I always thought it was this. Did I rip the wrong audio for this part?
Actually, you did. Actually, the real audio is right. Don't You Forget About Me.
Don't you
hold on for one more day.
And my raven familiar, yeah.
And that brings us to an end of The Crow. Oh, my God, we did it with the biggest Crow fan in the world, Chris Lawrence. Thank you so much.
Actually, not only this for is your all knowledge, just a ruse. I hate this movie.
I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
No, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the show in this iconic movie of the 90s that brought us all a little bit closer. And between this and South Park, introduced me to the band The Cure. So I'm very excited.
By the way,
excited.
This was the first time I saw this movie this week. So
this
are
is
you
it.
Kidding me?
Whoa.
No,
it wasn't. I
so,
know
Jeremy,
wasn't.
What did you think? Seriously, what did you think about the movie?
I thought it was the greatest ripoff of Highlander and Batman. So
there you go. That's a classic Jeremy Woodworth take.
And you can hate me if you want.
And Jeremy, most of our listeners already do. Don't worry. We've already.
Hey, I'm the biggest troll on earth.
Chris, where can people find you at and find all your Crow memorabilia that they can try to purchase off you for tens of dollars?
You can find me at Club Trash this week. featuring for T-Bird and Skank. No, at Claw Comedy. As you said, I'll be on May 28th during the Riff in Time on your website, and I'm very much excited for it. And
Wait a second.
Can I ask Chris when he's going to get The Crow on 4K?
Yeah, that's this week. So if you're listening to this, by the way, Thursday night, if you're listening to it the day that this comes out, which is a Monday, this Thursday night, check out Facebook Live. We're going to be streaming it. It's a it's another wonderful Riff in Time show. Come check that shit out. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. It's Eric with a K, Comedy with a C. Find links to all the fucking shit I'm doing online these days. We're having a great time. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. If you look back on their timeline, you could probably see my show that happened 2 weeks ago. It was probably fucking great, and I wasn't as drunk as I am right now. Check out The Killer Clown Meets the Candyman. Star Jeremy Woodworth and Edward Young Axe, directed by Pete Jackalome. Jeremy, take us out of here.
Midgets Are Awesome is almost hitting 1,000 members now. Thank you, everyone!